This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
And how are you on this Thursday, the 18th of April, 2024? Mind's Eye Radio welcomes you to the reading of Military Times. My name is Rob Johnson. As I said, today is Thursday, April 18th, 2024. It is the 109th day of this year, 257 days remaining. The first article in today's reading, the headline, Marines Work with New Ships, Interceptors, and Drone Platforms. The Marine Corps seeks to purchase 8 new ships over the next 5 years in their current budget proposal to move littoral regiments around islands in the Pacific as it aims to counter the Chinese military. Commandant General Eric Smith told members of the House Committee on Appropriations in a hearing last week that the Corps would acquire the first landing ship, medium MED IUM, in fiscal 2025. The force design effort continues apace, and it requires a landing ship medium, Smith said. The Corps needs ships that can go inter-island and be able to beach itself and to come off a beach in order to carry those capabilities of long-range fires and sensing and making sense and passing to the joint force what the People's Republic of China is doing throughout the first island chain, he added. Plans call for another landing ship medium purchase in fiscal 2026 and 2 each year through 2029. The program previously was called the Light Amphibious Warship Program. The Corps has the 3rd Marine Littoral Regiment in Hawaii and recently stood up the 12th Marine Littoral Regiment in Okinawa, Japan, which still is receiving personnel and equipment. Another Marine Littoral Regiment is scheduled to form in Guam in 2027. Each regiment will require 9 landing ship mediums. The Corps wants a total of 35 landing ship mediums to have 8 additional ships to fill in during maintenance for the operational vessels. The Navy released its request for proposals on the landing ship medium in January, with responses due by May, Defense News reported. The initial contract would cover 6 vessels. But Marines aren't waiting for those vessels to test the concept. In February, the Marine Corps Warfighting Laboratory began experiments with the Resolution, an offshore supply vessel modified with a stern landing ramp capable of offloading direction onto a beach, the U.S. Naval Institute reported. The lab is working with the 254-foot vessel under a contract with 2 other planned contracts for such commercial offshore vessels as a prototype for the landing ship medium. The vessel was used at the Army's Project Convergence experiment at Camp Pendleton, California, in late February. Marines integrated with Army operations on fires and sustainment in a contested environment for the event. Testing included hauling personnel, vehicles, gear, and vessel-launched drone operations. Marines envision using the landing ship medium in the shallower littoral zone where larger ships can't go moving units and gear from ship to shore and shore to shore and back to sea. Current concept designs have the landing ship medium at 200 feet to 400 feet in length with 8,000 square feet of cargo space. The top general also briefed members on 2 new weapon systems, a missile radar combination used to intercept enemy missiles, and a new drone aimed to support the Marine Expeditionary Units for electromagnetic, artificial intelligence and intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance needs. Smith updated congressional leaders on the performance of the service's use of the TPS-80 ground air task-oriented radar combined with the Israeli-made Tamir, T-A-M-I-R, interceptor missile known as the medium-range intercept capability. The missile fits our needs. It is light enough to be transported, and it has the range we require to protect our forces when paired with the TPS-80G/ATOR radar, Smith said. Each medium-range intercept capability launcher houses 20 missiles and can fire at ranges of more than 40 miles, according to the Raytheon website, which partners with Israeli defense company Rafael to build the missiles. In his written remarks to the committee members, Smith outlined progress on the XQ-58A Valkyrie, V-A-L-K-Y-R-I-E, an autonomous, low-cost tactical drone. The drone completed its second test flight in February, he wrote. The system has six planned test flights that will measure its support for intelligence, surveillance and reconnaissance missions, autonomous, electromagnetic support to crewed platforms, crewed, uncrewed, teaming task, and the potential for artificial intelligence-enabled platforms to augment combat air patrols, Smith wrote. The drone is part of the Corps' penetrating, affordable, autonomous, collaborative killer experiment, which is also providing data for its ongoing Marine Air Ground Task Force unmanned aerial system that's also called the MUX, the MUX program. In our next story, the cruiser Antietam, A-N-T-I-E-T-A-M, has moved from Japan to Joint Base Pearl Harbor, Hickam, Hawaii, as part of a planned rotation of forces in the region. The shift is part of a broader rearrangement of ships in the West Pacific, including swapping the aircraft carrier Ronald Reagan with the George Washington. The GW George Washington previously served in Japan between 2008 and 2015. The ship left its previous home port in Yokosuka, Japan in January and participated in the Oceania Maritime Security Initiative mission to augment the Coast Guard's maritime law enforcement operations while en route to Hawaii. The cruiser, based in Japan since 2013, also conducted a number of port visits during its transit across the Pacific. I'm proud of the crew for their execution of the Oceanic Maritime Security Initiative during our home port shift from Japan to Hawaii, the captain of the ship, Victor Garza, said in a statement. I do thank the families for their support that they give their sailors. It is their strength that enables us to remain at sea. The cruiser is swapping spots with the destroyer McCampbell, which returned to Japan in March. In our next story, we learn the U.S. Air Force has awarded a contract for an airfield on Tinian, T-I-N-I-A-N, a Pacific island military leaders consider crucial to their plans in the region. Fluor, F-L-U-O-R, an engineering and construction company based in Irving, Texas, will receive about $409 million to finish the project within 5 years, the company announced on April the 10th. Tinian is part of the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands, an American territory north of Guam and about 1,500 miles east of the Philippines. The Air Force launched bomber raids against Japan from Tinian during World War II. Since then, the island's jungle has grown over the Finnish runways. For years, U.S. Indo-Pacific Command, the military organization responsible for the region, has wanted to rebuild them. Its goal is part of what the Air Force calls agile combat employment, divvying U.S. forces into smaller groups around the region. More smaller groups would make American positions harder to target, according to the argument. The top military and civilian leaders in the Air Force visited the island earlier this month to survey work on the airfield. Since January, airmen have started to clear hundreds of acres of jungle so that construction can begin. Indo-Pacific Command sends lawmakers an annual wish list of projects it deems necessary to deter a conflict in the region. This year's list included $4.8 billion for infrastructure, although about a fifth of these construction projects show up in the Pentagon's budget request for fiscal 2025. Pentagon and military leaders in the Pacific sometimes disagree on where to spend money in the region and what work is even possible in the short term. That's particularly true when it comes to construction. Materials and workers are much more expensive on Pacific islands than in the continental United States, and projects require bureaucratic rigmarole to start. The result is often a path paved by delays, a Republican congressional aide told Defense News in January. The money takes very long to show up, the aide said. Then simultaneously, you're dealing with horrific bureaucratic problems. As a U.S. territory with existing sites to build on and mostly flat land, Tinian should be one of the easier places for the Defense Department to work, the aide said. Tinian is not a complicated project, the aide said. In our next story, the Army announced it's partnering with the United Football League, the UFL, a building alternative to the National Football League, as the service looks to score a touchdown on recruitment after fumbling to reach its goals in recent years. The UFL, the United Football League, formed from a merger of the United States Football League and the XFL, kicked off its inaugural season in March. With 8 teams spanning from San Antonio, Texas to Detroit, Michigan, the two conferences of footballers are set to play a 10-game regular season. Under this partnership, an Army logo will be featured on all game day jerseys and at the 50-yard line, according to a statement earlier this month from the league. Recruiters will also be present at various games, Army spokesman Colonel Dave Butler told Military Times. Like the Army's other high-profile national partnerships, the UFL partnership allows the Army to engage with a wider audience on different platforms for Americans to learn about the possibilities of Army service. Laura DeFrancisco from the Army's corporate marketing office told Military Times in a statement. As the Army seeks to reach the end zone on its end strength numbers, officials and leaders recognize the Young Spring Sports League could provide an opportunity to attract potential soldiers. The current one-year deal, worth around $9 million, a person familiar with the matter told Military Times, will offer the Army a regular chance to cast its message across a wide net thanks to broadcast partners including Fox Television and Disney. Our reach is pretty broad, Russ Brandon, UFL's president and CEO, told Military Times. The military is no stranger to striking deals in the sports world to appeal to possible newcomers about the benefits and value of service. But it has also faced challenges in past endeavors, including last year when the arrest of actor Jonathan Majors, star of the revived Be All You Can Be campaign, prompted the Army to refresh its ads ahead of the final games of the NCAA men's basketball tournament, also known as March Madness. A study released in November by RAND, R-A-N-D, recommended an 80% increase in spending on television advertising for the Army, finding that the expenditure is relatively more cost-effective than offering bonuses. We're approaching 15 minutes past the hour. From the Observation Post of Military Times, this headline, Pentagon UFO chief says alien mothership in our solar system is a real possibility. There is a possibility that extraterrestrial motherships and smaller probes may be visiting planets in the solar system, the head of the Pentagon's Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Research Office noted in a report draft shared last week. An artificial interstellar object could be potentially a parent craft that releases many smaller probes during its close passage to the Earth, an operational construct not too dissimilar from NASA missions, Sean Kirkpatrick, director of the Pentagon's All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, wrote in a research report co-authored by Abraham Loeb, chairman of Harvard University's Astronomy Department. Kirkpatrick, who was appointed as director of the AARO, it was founded in July of 22, by the way, previously served as the chief scientist at the Defense Intelligence Agency's Missile and Space Intelligence Center. The AARO was established to investigate unidentified objects of interest around military installations, according to a Pentagon press release. Loeb, on the other hand, gained notoriety when he proposed our solar system had been traversed by its first extrasolar visitor in October of 2017. At that time, the Pan-STARRS, P-A-N-S-T-A-R-R-S telescope that's based in Hawaii, detected an object moving at a speed that caused some scientists to suggest that it originated outside our solar system. The object's orbit also hinted at other forces besides the sun's gravitational pull influencing the craft's movement. Scientists dubbed the object, and will spell it O-U-M-U-A-M-U-A, the Hawaiian term for scout, which Kirkpatrick and Loeb offer in their research paper as an example of a possible mothership with probe capabilities. With proper design, these tiny probes would reach the Earth or other solar system planets for exploration as the parent craft passes by within a fraction of the Earth-Sun separation, just like Scout did, the authors explain. Astronomers would not be able to notice the spray of mini probes because they do not reflect enough sunlight for existing survey telescopes to notice them. The research paper is titled Physical Constraints on Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, comes following a month of intense scrutiny of unidentified flying objects, a stirring trend ignited when a Japanese spy balloon captivated the nation by drifting across U.S. airspace. Three additional unidentified objects were subsequently found. On February 16, Senators Marco Rubio, a Republican from Florida, Kirsten Gillibrand, a Democrat from New York, and 12 other senators sent a letter to Deputy Secretary of Defense Kathleen Hicks and also Deputy Director of National Intelligence Stacey Dixon, calling for full funding for the AARO. Joe Biden's previous funding request for fiscal year 2023 failed to fund anything beyond the office's basic operating expenses, according to lawmakers. AARO provides the opportunity to integrate and resolve threats and hazards to the U.S. while also offering increased transparency to the American people and reducing the stigma, the lawmakers' letter stated. AARO's success will depend on robust funding for its activities and cooperation between the Department of Defense and the intelligence community. In our next story, we learn that 2,000 Air Force captains were chosen to rise to the rank of major in 2024 in a slightly tougher selection round for those who sought to climb the career ladder to O-4. About 84% of airmen who were considered, that's 1,995 captains of the Air Force's 2,367 captains, were tapped to advance, the service announced on Thursday. That's a slight dip from 2023's Major Selection Board, which gave the nod to 86% of eligible airmen. The 2024 Majors Select include 84.3% of eligible captains in air operations and special warfare jobs, 74% in nuclear and missile operations, 87.8% in information warfare, 84.1% in combat support, and 81.4% in force modernization. Those fields comprise the bulk of Air Force careers under what was previously known as the Line, L-I-N-E, of the Air Force. Selection rates fell in 2024 for all captains except those in nuclear and missile operations and information warfare, data provided to Air Force Time shows. About one-third of those selected in 2024 had been passed over for promotion at least once before. As in the lowest-ranking field grade officers, airmen typically spend about 10 years on active duty before attaining the rank of major and serve as senior staff officers in their squadrons. About 13,300 majors were serving in the Air Force at the end of February, according to the Pentagon data. Thursday's release also notes that 58 of 226 eligible majors who work in biomedical sciences will be promoted to lieutenant colonel for a selection rate of 25.7%. In 2023, the service began including advanced degrees as a factor in considering airmen for promotion to major or lieutenant colonel. While holding a master's degree or doctorate doesn't guarantee promotion, the Air Force said it wants to assemble a senior officer corps with extra skills and knowledge that can give the U.S. an edge in future conflicts. We need leaders and supporting staff throughout the Department of the Air Force who have deep expertise in emerging technologies and their applications to military operations. We also must have leaders with expertise in the cultures of our potential adversaries, Air Force Secretary Frank Kendall said in December of 23. Such expertise and associated critical thinking skills are developed from many sources and experiences, including advanced academic degree programs. And we're learning that troops would see larger monthly housing stipends, more child care and health care access, and targeted pay boosts for junior enlisted personnel under a sweeping military quality of life improvement plan unveiled by lawmakers on Thursday. The 31-point plan, the culmination of more than a year of work by a special panel of House Armed Services Committee members, could provide significant financial relief to struggling military families if enacted. But putting it in place will likely cost tens of billions of dollars in coming years, which will complicate its passage. Still, Committee Chairman Representative Mike Rogers, a representative of Alabama, a Republican representative, vowed to pass the reforms this year during a news conference outlining the plan. We intend to take all of these recommendations and put them into the National Defense Authorization Act, he said. We intend to get that across the finish line with these recommendations, so we're going to do that with this report. Committee leaders presented the plan as a much-needed blueprint to improve support and lower stress for the most vulnerable service members and their spouses. According to a RAND study released last year, as many as 1 in 4 troops suffer from some level of food insecurity, either because of poor pay or other service complications. The recommendations with the most direct impact on troops' families family finances would be the targeted pay boost and housing stipend increases. Under the panel's recommendation, all troops ranked E4 and below would see a 15% boost. This will restore real value to basic pay, given the increase in civilian earnings for those with high school diplomas and those with some college, the lawmakers said. Military members receive regular pay increases annually, but lawmakers on the panel said that those pay hikes have not kept up with inflation in recent years. This has been especially painful for the youngest enlisted troops, some of whom earn less than $25,000 a year in base pay. The targeted increases would bring most of these individuals' pay to more than $31,000 annually, roughly the equivalent of $15 an hour if you're paid on an hourly basis. Similarly, increasing troops' housing allowance would provide more immediate financial flexibility. Since 2016, the Defense Department has provided a stipend worth 95% of regional housing cost, this to eligible troops and families, with the exact amounts dependent on rank, zip code, and whether an individual has dependents. The panel report recommends boosting that to 100%, a move that could provide several thousand dollars annually to those families. Advocates have long pushed for the move, arguing that the current policy hurts troops by shortchanging them on housing expenses. But defense officials have said that move alone would cost the department more than $1 billion annually, money that will need to be taken from other readiness or modernization accounts in a constrained budget environment. Other panel recommendations include better pay and benefits for Defense Department child care workers to help recruit and retain more staffers, expanding eligibility for the military's basic allowance for subsistence stipend, amending hiring authorities to bring in more medical administrative staff, and improving military spouse career programs. The all-volunteer force is the foundation of America's military strength, said Representative Don Bacon, a Republican from Nebraska. He's chairman of the Quality of Life panel. For that reason, military quality of life is a central national security issue. Panel members said the moves all come in response to recurring concerns from military members and outside advocates. The report was signed by 7 Republicans, 6 Democrats, and supported by leadership of both parties. Outside advocates hailed the plan as a significant step forward in efforts to better the lives of military families. For our military and for our all-volunteer force to thrive, we need families to also thrive, said Shannon, last name Rasaden, president of the Military Family Advisory Network. This report really makes clear the steps we need to take, and we are grateful for that. We have heard what you are saying. The House Armed Services Committee is expected to craft its annual defense authorization bill over the next 6 weeks. The legislation has passed for more than 60 consecutive years and is considered the most likely vehicle for whichever report recommendations committee leaders opt to advance in the coming year. Senate leaders have expressed support for some of the ideas in the report, but have not committed to any specific plans on military pay or the quality of life of our members. Time check is 29 minutes past the hour. A reminder, you're listening to the reading of Military Times on the Mind's Eye Radio Network. A U.S. Air Force veteran who fled a charge of possessing sexually explicit images of a child told his lawyer he joined Russia's army, and video appears to show him signing documents in a military enlistment office in Siberia. Wilmer, W-I-L-M-E-R, Puello, P-U-E-L-L-O hyphen Mota, M-O-T-O, a former elected official in a small Massachusetts city, was expected to enter a guilty plea in Rhode Island in early January, but did not show up for court, according to prosecutors. Last week, video surfaced that appears to show the 28-year-old in Russia and expressing support for the country's war against Ukraine, footage that could be used to promote Moscow's narrative of the conflict. His lawyer, John M., last name Cicilline, C-I-C-I-L-L-I-N-E, told the Boston Globe that he called Puello Mota on January 8th, the day before he was expected to plead guilty. According to prosecutors, he boarded a flight from Washington, D.C. to Istanbul, Turkey, a day earlier. He said, "I joined the Russian army or something like that," the attorney said. "I thought he was joking." The attorney continued that his client wanted a career in politics and thought the criminal case had ruined his life. "I'm sure he joined the Russian army because he didn't want to register as a sex offender," the lawyer said. The Associated Press made several calls to the former soldier. A person answering his office phone said he would not make any additional comments. Puello Mota served in the U.S. Air Force and deployed to Afghanistan in 2015 when he was 19, media releases show. He later served with the Massachusetts National Guard's 104th Fighter Wing as a security forces airman. He was arrested in 2020 in Warwick, Rhode Island, after he called to report a gun stolen, and police said they found nude images of a 17-year-old girl on his phone. He was charged with one count of having sexually explicit images of a child. He was later charged with trying to deceive prosecutors and his commanders about the case. The lawyer told the Globe he reached a deal to plead guilty to all charges in exchange for an 18-month prison sentence. Videos surfaced on Russian social media and local television in March showed the blurred image of a man in a uniform in what appears to be a war zone displaying the U.S. flag. In video posted online last week, a man who looks like Puello Mota talks directly to the camera, speaking in English over background music and Russian subtitles and discussing a military operation. His face is not blurred. He does not say his name, and the videos do not mention the Rhode Island criminal case. Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, has eliminated nearly all independent media in Russia, and state media aligned regularly trumpet Russian victories in Ukraine, denounce the United States, and otherwise amplify good news while ignoring the bad. The Rhode Island Attorney General's office said in a court document last month that it had received images purporting to show the soldier in Ukraine also in Russia. While the state cannot verify the authenticity of the videos and photographs, if they are accurate, the defendant is well beyond the jurisdiction of this court, and if false, the defendant is engaged in an elaborate ruse to conceal his whereabouts, Rhode Island prosecutors said. U.S. State Department officials said they were aware of media reports about the man fleeing to Russia, but have had no contact with him and have no way to confirm those reports. The most recent video appears to show the man entering a building in Siberia and shaking the hand of a uniformed man. At the end of the video, he is seen signing a document. The AP verified the location after examining satellite imagery and historical photos of the area. According to a plaque on the door, it's a military recruitment center run by the Russian Defense Ministry. Obviously, it's a difficult situation. It's war. It's a special military operation, the man says in the video, adding that he was lucky to be with people from the International Brigade. We did our work, we did our job, we did what we were supposed to do, he said. I was very lucky and fortunate to serve with those guys. I definitely would do it again. Ian Garner, an assistant professor of politics at Queen's University in Canada, called it a huge propaganda opportunity for Russia. To be able to show off an American citizen who has chosen to reinvest themselves, to reform themselves, and to become part of the Russian war machine seems to provide evidence that Russia is winning a much bigger spiritual war, he said. The soldier held the rank of technical sergeant when he was forced to leave the Guard in October of 2022 because of the criminal case, according to Don Vidich, a spokesperson for the Massachusetts National Guard. The man's security clearance was also revoked. Holyoke City Councilor David Bartley, who worked with the soldier on the city council, said he considers him a good friend. He said the person in the video does look and sound like him. To me, that is him, he said. He knew of no connections between Puello, Mehta, and Russia and called the footage shocking. The Will that I know was a good, decent person, Bartley added. A Facebook page attributed to Puello Mehta includes a photo of the Kremlin and an updated profile photo of a man in a uniform operating a drone. The caption on the photo says the man, the soldier, is from Holyoke and currently lives in Moscow and works at the Russian Defense Ministry, which is spelled in Russian. Under Rhode Island law, the soldier's trial cannot begin without him being present in the courtroom. It's 24 minutes before the hour. Let's review an opinion piece in today's edition of Military Times. The headline, Higher Fitness Standards Will Prepare Soldiers for Real-World Problems. This article written by Alex Morrow, M-O-R-R-O-W. There is a concept called bulldozer parenting that refers to parents who knock down every obstacle for their children before they get a chance to struggle. While this is meant to protect their children from short-term harm, psychology lecturer Rachel Sharman, S-H-A-R-M-A-N, observed it ultimately results in a psychologically fragile child, fearful and avoidant of failure, with never learned coping strategies and poor resistance. Those same good intentions can lead to senior leadership, bulldozer parenting of our soldiers, and the troubled Army Combat Fitness Test, the ACFT implementation, is certainly an example of that failure. The Legacy Army Physical Fitness Test, the APFT, was designed based on a Cold War-era assumption that ground combat was a thing of the past, an illusion that left many soldiers physically unprepared for what they faced during the global war on terror. The initial version of the ACFT, to address lessons learned in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan, represented a significant challenge for the force. Predictably, the raised expectations were met with an initial wave of failures. Despite leg tucks being in training doctrine for over a decade, initial ACFT trials showed that 60% of women and 8% of men failed to complete one repetition. Army data later revealed that 7 months into the ACFT implementation, those failure rates had dropped to 22% of women. Remember, it was at 60%, and 2% of men. Originally, it was at 8%. That same data also indicated that soldiers failed the run at an even higher rate, 22% of women and 5% of men, despite the passing standard getting easier compared to the APFT for most demographics. One way to fix this would have been to give soldiers time and resources to rise to the challenge. Instead, under significant political pressure, the Army chose to remove the leg tuck and to rewrite score charts to guarantee that most soldiers would pass. That also sent a clear message that future attempts to raise standards would be canceled if soldiers failed frequently enough. This was the opposite of what the ACFT was designed to address, a need for tougher training and higher standards for a new era of combat. The test began as a criterion referenced assessment with Army-wide field test in 2018, meaning the standards were based on predictable demands stemming from combat operations or one's occupation, though officials deliberately set minimum passing scores lower than those demands. After these adjustments, it became a norm referenced assessment, meaning scores were adjusted to reflect average performance levels. And remember, without any actual changes to training or policy, these were the same performance levels that leaders identified as insufficient when they first directed the ACFT's development. Also, since this was a pilot study, soldiers had little incentive to push themselves in the test. Evaluators